We're learning the book of Daniel, and we had learned how Daniel was appointed in Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom, and Nebuchadnezzar had that the first dream, which he forgot, and Daniel told him the dream, and then the explanation, and then Nebuchadnezzar had the second dream. We saw how Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah wouldn't bow to the idol that he erected, and then he had the second dream, and that dream came true as well. Daniel explained to him how he would be removed from humanity, and after 7 years he'll come back, and all of that happened. And Nebuchadnezzar wrote a letter telling the people how all of this happened. And we finished the letter, and now we're up to what the Christians call the fifth chapter.
Can I?
Yes, Mayor, what's your question?
Who was Belshazzar?
So, after Nebuchadnezzar ruled over Babylon for 45 years, he passed away, and his son Evil-Merodach took over for 23 years. Now, Nebuchadnezzar, we had discussed, was part of the Assyrian forces. He was a soldier in the Assyrian army. And then he worked his way up. He built up the Babylonian Empire till they became a power that really controlled the world. He was ruler over all areas where there were inhabitants. I mean, he ruled the globe technically. And he was king for 45 years over the Babylonian Empire. He passed away. His son Evil-Merodach took over the throne for 23 years. So now the Babylonian Empire has been around for 68 years. And then Belshazzar takes over, and it is unclear whether Belshazzar was another son of Nebuchadnezzar's or whether he was a grandson of Nebuchadnezzar's. The common understanding has it that Belshazzar was another son of Nebuchadnezzar's. And Vashti is going to be Nebuchadnezzar's granddaughter. Bottom line, Belshazzar is either Nebuchadnezzar's son or grandson, and he takes the throne. Now, what?
So what was Daniel's Babylonian name?
Belshazzar.
That is not the same name.
So I didn't see anyone that comments on it. I also wondered. I don't know. So now we're going to continue, and Daniel takes us into the third year of Belshazzar's reign. Now, Belshazzar is having a war with the Persian Mede Empire, and they are the up-and-coming empire. What's interesting about the book of Daniel is that in the course of the next two chapters, what the Christians denote as the next two chapters, we're going to read stories. And then what they denote as the seventh chapter, we're just going to use that denotation marks. We're going to use those denotation marks because it's easier to know what we're talking about, where in the prophet we're talking. We go back in the seventh chapter to the first year of Belshazzar. So technically, if we were interested in learning this book in chronological order, we should skip forward to the seventh chapter. And over there, Daniel recounts a dream he had. Daniel dreams about when redemption should come. He dreams about the four kingdoms. He himself has a vision. And we're going to leave that, as we do every year. We are going to learn the next two chapters, which will tell us the information we need for our introduction to the book of Esther, because Purim is coming up. So the rest of the book of Daniel will have to be left for a later date. And if you guys are really interested, then you could do what all other classes didn't do, and that is push me to get back to Daniel after we finish Esther. Okay. Right now it doesn't look like we'll finish it by Purim. So for today, we will try to advance, at least finish the stories of Daniel. The prophecies in the end, the last six chapters, which are prophecies discussing when redemption would come. You have a summary, a printed summary online, of the different calculations, and that we will give out for those of you who want at the end of this class, the beginning of next class, as an introduction to Esther, what's going on here as far as the calculations, and we'll discuss it a little bit today. And the other chapters, if you guys want, if it's only Daniel, then Daniel and I will have our own Seder learning it. If other people want to join, so long distance. Daniel, no. Ah, okay. Seder. I didn't realize it was so up and coming. So maybe Purim. Purim morning, those of you who want to learn. Maybe on Purim we'll be able to have some learning. Purim night. He's giving me a guilt trip. Okay. Belshazzar Malka. So we're up to what's called the fifth chapter. The king Belshazzar made a great feast. He had been fighting a war with the Persian Mede Empire, and he won a very big battle. So he makes this great feast. And when he makes this feast, he drinks l'chaim, he does cheers with 1,000 people, and he drinks the volume that 1,000 people drink. So he drinks the volume of the equivalent of what 1,000 of his men are drinking during this party. And the wine goes to his head, and there's been one thing that's been bugging the Babylonian Empire, and that is that they want to be eternal. When Nebuchadnezzar hears that there will be a Messiah, that the Babylonian Empire won't be eternal, he tries to cause the Jewish people to sin, to bring them down. All of the forces, the Babylonian forces, the Chaldean forces, when they entered Israel and destroyed the temple, they knew Kastim, I don't know if that's Chaldean, the Kastim are translated as the, I don't remember. In English, how do you say Kastim? I don't remember. They're Chaldean? No, I'm not sure. Maybe. Okay. So, they all knew that there were many people waltzing around Jerusalem prior to the destruction, giving prophecy, it's all going to be good, don't worry, God won't give this city into the hands of the enemy. There was a prophet inside Jerusalem who said, the city will be given over, prepare yourself, God has decreed that the city will be destroyed. And that was the prophet Yirmiyahu, the prophet Jeremiah. And all the nations honored Jeremiah. They knew he was a true prophet. They knew that his prophecies came true. Even the wise man Plato came to witness the destruction of the temple and to interview Jeremiah. There was a meeting between Jeremiah and Plato. And we have a record of the conversation between them. And in our classes on Tisha B'Av, we've discussed it. But for now... Where is it written? The easiest place for you to find it is in the Sefer HaTodah on Tisha B'Av. The Sefer HaTodah, he quotes the Medrash. I don't remember where the Medrash is. So, Jeremiah was valued and respected by all nations, not only the Jews. And Jeremiah had said that Babylon would last 70 years. And Jeremiah had said that when Babylon has its fill of 70 years, God will again call upon the Jewish people. Now Belshazzar did some math, and he figured, my father started the Babylonian Empire. He was king for 45 years. My brother was king for 23 years. I was king for 2 years. 70 years are up for the Babylonian Empire, and we're still around. The Jews have not been sent back to rebuild Jerusalem. Must be, God gave up on the Jewish people. So now in the third year of his reign, Belshazzar just won a great war. He wants to celebrate, and he's exceptionally happy. He says, once we've broken that 70-year mark, must be that the Jewish people are no longer the chosen people. Maybe my father really got them to sin enough that they are no longer chosen. Maybe for a different reason they're no longer chosen. Father, grandfather, however you want to say it. But at the end of the day, Belshazzar assumes that it's over for the Jews. If it's over for the Jews, then Babylon has a chance. They could be eternal. So now, in this party, Belshazzar says, bring out the gold and silver vessels that were taken from the temple. And Belshazzar drinks from it. His officers, his wives, his concubines, everyone drinks from them. According to one understanding in the Gemara, even his dog was given to drink from the holy vessels of the temple. Everyone's drinking, and they start praising their gold, silver, copper, metal, wood, stone gods. The gods they have of all these different materials, they praise them. They attribute their military success to these gods. And as they're praising these gods, a human finger appears opposite the chandelier and starts writing on the sid of the wall, on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king sees this hand appear out of nowhere and start writing on his wall. And the king freaked out, using modern terminology. His countenance changed, his mind, his thoughts got scared, and he's standing there, and the Navi uses all kinds of terms to describe how his knees started clanking against one another, and his joints started shaking, and one thing after another. Bottom line, he was very, very scared. He yelled out and said, bring in all my wise men. Whoever could read that writing on the wall and explain to me what it says will get royal clothing, and I'll give him a third of my kingdom. He'll rule over a third of my kingdom. All the wise men are ushered in, and they all look at the writing on the wall, and they can't read what it says. So Belshazzar got even more scared. And his officers were all flustering, trying to figure out what it says. And the queen hears that there's a whole ruckus, so she comes into the party. And the queen says, long live the king. Don't be scared of your thoughts. Don't look so scared. There's a man in the kingdom who has the spirit of the holy gods in him. And in the days of your father, he was found to have great wisdom. The king Nebuchadnezzar, your father, he made him head of his advisors. So it's known that he has the Holy Spirit in him, and he's very smart. He could interpret dreams. He could tell secrets. He could undo knots. He could figure everything out. So call him in, and he'll tell you the explanation. So Daniel is brought before the king, and the king tells Daniel, are you Daniel from the Jews who are exiled, that my father brought from among the Jews, and I've heard about you, that the spirit of the holy God is in you, and you have great wisdom and knowledge. Now, all my wise men have been brought in here, and they can't tell me what the writing on the wall means. He's embarrassed to say they can't even read it. He says, they can't tell me what it means. And I heard about you that you could figure everything out. So tell me what the writing on the wall says and what it means, and I will dress you with royal clothing and give you a third of my kingdom. And Daniel says, keep your gifts, keep everything you're offering, give them to someone else, but I will tell you what it says, and I'll explain to you what it says. You, my king, the God above gave you a great kingdom, and he gave your father great glory, and he made him so powerful that all nations were scared of him. Whoever he wanted, he killed. Whoever he wanted, he hit. Whoever he wanted, he exalted, he raised up. Whoever he wanted, he put down. And then he became too proud. And so he was removed from the throne. He was removed. All the glory was removed from him. And he stopped being human. He became animal-like. And he ran around like a wild animal. He ran around naked in the rain until he recognized that God is running the world. And God chooses who to place a ruler over other men. And you, his son Belshazzar, you knew that story. You knew that God taught your father a lesson And nonetheless, you weren't modest. You were proud. You knew all that and you didn't care. You rebelled against the Lord in heaven, and you took out His vessels, the vessels of His home. You brought them before you, and you and your soldiers and your concubines, everyone drank from those vessels. And not only that, as you're drinking from God's vessels, you are praising your gods of silver and gold and copper and metal and wood and stone. They can't see, they can't hear, they don't know, but you praise them. And the God who gives you life, and He controls everything you do, Him you gave no honor to. So God sent this hand from before Him, and that hand wrote on your wool. And this is what it wrote on the wool. Now, if you'd look at the writing on the wool, what the writing on the wool said, if you read it going across, was Mamtus nanakfei a'algan. But really, you had to read it going down. And the way you read it going down was Minei Memnon Aleph, Minei Memnon Aleph, Tekel Tafkuf Lamed, Uparsin Vav Pei Reish, and then the next line going down is Samach Yud Nun.
Where did you bring it?
The Mitzvot David. Going across was Nun Nun Kuf Pei Yud, Nanak Pei. I'm sorry, Mamtus was the first line. Mem Mem Taf Vav Samech. Then Nanak Pei. And then A'algan. Aleph Aleph Lamed Reish Nun. Which spelling going down is Minei Minei Tekelu Parsin. According to the Mtsudas, that's why they couldn't read it. There are other Pshatim. We're going with that one. For the sake of simplicity. What does it mean, Daniel tells him? Minei, God took account of your kingdom and it's up. God took an exact count and it is up now. Tekel, you've been weighed and found lacking. Parsin, paras is to shatter. Parsin, a double shattering, your kingdom is going to be shattered by the kingdom of the Persian Mede Empire, Paras. Belshazzar sees that Daniel figured out what it says on the wall, and Belshazzar commands that Daniel be dressed with royal clothing, and he's given control of a third of the kingdom. That night Belshazzar is killed, and Dariavish the Mede takes the throne. Now, how was Belshazzar killed? So, there are different things brought down. The history books say... Huh? I didn't understand. What? Doesn't say that. It says Belshazzar was killed. So, the prophet in Yeshaya, in Isaiah, says, "Kumu asarim mishchum again," that in the middle of the feast there was a surprise attack by the Persian Mede Empire, and that seems to indicate, like Meir suggested, that he was killed by the Persian Mede Empire. Josephus says that there. I think it's in Josephus. Rashi quotes it elsewhere, but I think he quotes it from Josephus that. When Belshazzar made the decree, so there are two different versions quoted in two different places in Rashi. One version says that Belshazzar was scared he'd get killed that night. So he told his guards, "You don't kill anyone. You don't let anyone roam my palace tonight. Anyone that's caught roaming my palace gets killed." And then God made it that he had to go to the bathroom. So he got out of his room in his pajamas and went to the bathroom, and the guards saw him, and they were told if they see anyone at night they should kill him. They killed him. And they killed him, so the guard that killed him saw, I just killed the king, what should I do? So he said, well, Daniel said that the Persian Mede Empire is taking over anyway. So he took his head over to the Persian Mede Empire, and then they attacked, and then they got the throne. Another version that's quoted is that there was one officer who said, wait a second, why should I be top officer for Belshazzar? Daniel's a man of God. And he said that the Persian Mede Empire is taking over. If I want to do well, I should place my bets with the Persian Mede Empire. So he snuck in when Belshazzar was sleeping, chopped off his head, and brought it to the Persian Mede Empire, and then they took over. And the history books seem to say that the people of Babylon themselves, they accepted Dariush as king, they accepted the Persian Mede rule, and it was Belshazzar's officers who killed him that night. That night, his servants killed him, and they don't say why, so that could go in line with it, either one of the things about how he was killed that night. And then there was a peaceful overtaking. The Persian Mede Empire took over peacefully. The people of Babylon welcomed them in. So now Darius took the throne. He became king over the Babylonian Empire. And there was a treaty between the Persians and the Medes that the first king would be a Mede, and then the vice president, the second in command, would be a Persian. And then when he died, the next king would be a Persian and the second in command would be a Mede. And as is the case with these treaties throughout history, it didn't last very long. We only find one Mede king and possibly two. Eventually the Persians held on to the throne. As we know, it's known as the Persian Empire and almost no one ever heard of the Medes. So Dariush the Mede took the throne. And we're going to see that this Dariush was a very righteous person. Dariush took the throne, and Dariush appointed 120 advisors. And on top of these 120, there were three top advisors, and between all of them, they were supposed to give good advice to the king. Now, one of those three was Daniel, and Daniel outdid everyone else. So they were all jealous of him. Now, one of the laws in the Persian Mede Empire was that once the king made a decree, he couldn't rescind the decree. And we're going to see that in the book of Esther as well. So the other advisors were jealous of Daniel, and they wanted to see if they could find something wrong that Daniel had done. So they checked the records, they checked his taxes, they checked where he parked his car, they checked everything he did. It was in perfect order with the law. He never did anything that was against the law. So they came to the conclusion that the only way they could bring him down was if they made a new law that would contradict his religion. So all the advisors came to the king and they said, "Long live the king." We all came to the conclusion that if you want to strengthen your throne, you have to institute a law that for 30 days, no one may ask a request of any god or any person other than you. Any formal request that's posed to anyone else, well, whoever makes that request will be thrown into the lion's den. So the king says, "All of my advisors, you all agree that we should enact such a law?" They all say, "Yeah, it's a good idea." So he writes the law and he seals it. He signs it. Daniel hears of the law. He goes home. And up in his attic, he has windows open towards Jerusalem. Three times a day, he prays towards Jerusalem just as he had done before the exile. So Daniel continues doing what he had done. This is a religious practice. This isn't a specific request from anyone. So these men, they come and they peek and they take a look and they could get an angle. They see through the window, they see Daniel praying. So they come to the king and they say, "Didn't you ask that anyone that asks of any god any request will be thrown to the lion's den?" So the king said, "Yeah, that's what I said, and I can't change it. That's been the decree." So they say to the king, Daniel from the exiled Jews, he doesn't care about your laws. Three times a day he asks his request from God. And when the king heard that, he was very upset. He didn't want to hurt Daniel. So he spent all day trying to find ways, legal loopholes, to get Daniel off the hook. And whatever he tried wouldn't work. So the advisors come and they tell him, "You have to know, this is the law in Persian and Mede, that the king can't change his law." And the king sees that he has no choice. So he calls Daniel before him and they throw him into the lion's den. And as he throws him in, Darius tells Daniel, "The God that you pray frequently before him should save you." And then they bring this huge stone and they place it over the den. The king seals it and his advisors seal it. The king seals it because he figures God might intervene between him and the lions. But like we discussed last week, when it comes to another human being who has b'chira chofshit, then God is less prone to intervene. So he said maybe the advisors will come and throw darts or stones and try to kill him themselves. And there God might not intervene. When it comes to animals, there God may intervene. It's more likely. The advisors were worried, maybe the king will figure out some kind of plot, or throw in a bunch of meat, something else for the lions, maybe he'll figure out a way of saving Daniel. So they were happy to seal it, ensure that the king doesn't intervene. And then the king went home, he didn't eat that night, he didn't allow his royal ensemble to play their music, he couldn't sleep all night. And early in the morning he rushed over to the den, and as he approaches the den he yells out in a sorrowful voice, "Daniel, the servant of the living God, did the God that you pray before him frequently, was he capable of saving you from the lions?" And Daniel says to the king, "Long live the king. My God sent his angel and he closed the mouths of the lions and they didn't harm me. God found some merit before him, some merit for me before him. And you, my king, you also did nothing wrong in throwing me down here." So the king, it was very good in his eyes. He was very happy. He ordered to have Daniel taken out of the den. And everyone saw that nothing had happened to him. He had faith in Hashem. And the king commanded, they brought the men who had spoken badly about Daniel, and they were thrown into the den, them, their children, and their wives. And they didn't even hit the ground. But before they hit the ground, the lions took hold of them and they devoured them, and even their bones were ground. And Daryavish wrote a letter to all the nations telling them that he is making a law that whoever speaks badly about the God of Daniel will be punished, and that everyone has to have fear and respect of the God of Daniel. He is the living God, he is forever, and he controls everything. He saves people, he does miracles, he saved Daniel from the hands of the lion. And Daniel was successful in the kingdom of Daryavish and in the kingdom of his son Koresh. Now, Daryavish died that year. That year he went to war and he was killed at war. And his son-in-law, Koresh the Persian, took over. And Be'ezrat Hashem, next week when we begin, so we'll hand out sheets that summarize the order of kings, and when did the Jews go back to Jerusalem, when were they granted permission, when was that permission rescinded, when was Achashverosh. Achashverosh was really after this Koresh. You have Daryavish, then this Koresh, and then you have our Achashverosh. And then Achashverosh is going to have a son who is also called Koresh. And if there is an interest over here, the rest of the book of Daniel on the surface is far less exciting. It's not stories like the first six chapters. But if we have people who are interested, then Be'ezrat Hashem we will find time and we will conclude the book. But for now, these are the stories. The rest are prophecies about when, about the future. Yeah.